At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
You're listening to the Chasing Tales Outdoor Podcast, where when you can't be in the outdoors, we bring it to you. All right, guys, we are sitting outside. We are doing a live in-person podcast, which we very seldomly get the opportunity to do. So I am more than thrilled that we're sitting outside. This is the first live one we've done since COVID has hit. Actually, no, that's not true. This is the second one because the last one was during COVID. So either which way, I am surrounded by a table full of killers, a couple canine onlookers, and some people here who are for motivational support here, emotional support. And we are trying on saddles. We're talking saddles. We just did a one-stick and demo. We've had some friends bring up some sticks and show up their setups, and we're at the Tallahassee Teaching Train, which was an absolute blast. I always enjoy being able to sit down with everybody and talk about stuff, eat some food, swap stories. It always seems like it's a good group of people. But my name is Walt. I'm your host. We're doing this joint with the Hunt Fish Florida podcast. So I guess technically my co-host should introduce himself.
My name is Taylor Willis.
There it is. All right, all done. Podcast over. But no, seriously, it's a good group of guys. It's beautiful freaking weather. It was a 40% chance of rain as of last weekend, which, I mean, literally bluebird skies. The wood bees are zooming around us right now, so if you hear that, it just reminds you that you should have been outside not listening to this podcast. But we're going to do like a round table, going counterclockwise. Introduce yourself, sir.
Adam Glass from Central Florida Outdoors.
There it is.
Taylor Willis, Hunt Fish Florida.
There it is.
Brett Mashburn, Southeast Alabama.
Resident Booner Slayer. Keep going.
Nick Chandler, Heart of Florida, Outdoors.
Chase Prince, co-host, Chasing Tails Outdoors.
Hey, the face of Chasing Tails. He puts the chase in Chasing Tails.
So they tell me.
But, dude, I'm glad everybody, some of y'all made a hell of a drive. I mean, you took, it's 4 hours for you. It's 4 hours same. For you as
yep,
well.
Same.
I appreciate you guys coming up here.
Absolutely.
Brett, it took you, what, 2 hours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Suppose, you know, not quite as dramatic, but I still appreciate it. That's four hours round trip in a day for no deer. That's saying something. I just love the fact that we're all saddle hunters, especially you now, Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, if my wife lets me use it.
Taylor's wife won a Predator platform, Phantom saddle, 8mm ropes, a Kong duck, and a Predator pack. So it was exciting because I thought you guys were already into saddle hunting, but it turns out you're not.
No, actually, you know, we mostly hunt out of climbers, and she just got tired of carrying a climber in and got interested in saddle hunting. And obviously, you know, we have been Instagram friends for a couple years through, you know, creating content about Florida outdoors, and she's basically the reason we're here. You know, I kind of got fed up with using a lock-on and said I'm interested, not sure if it's for me yet, but I kind of don't have a reason not to now.
Did you try one?
I've tried Nick's. Yeah,
yeah.
We both
think?
Have tried Nick's. I see the advantage. I see why people like it. I really do. There's a few more gadgets you got to take in with you, but
yep.
I can definitely see why it's such a big craze, and I'm definitely going to give it a try this year for sure.
Good, man. I'm excited to hear that. I think everybody at this table has seen their deer hunting change because of saddles. I mean, it seems like it's overworn. It has altered the game. Right, like it is what it is, and it's an efficient way of getting in there. I miss my climber from time to time. I'm not going to lie to anybody at the table. I miss my midday naps. You know, I probably more deer's lives have been spared because I was asleep instead of hunting. But you know, I don't miss it the moment it is, or any time, which is 9 months out of the year, in the 80s as the high, and in the lows in the 70s with high humidity. I don't miss it at that point in time in the slightest.
Yeah, the only reason I use my climber now is for gun hunting.
Yeah.
Gun hunting purposes, and it's cold usually
right.
during gun season anyways.
Yeah.
And I feel like it provides a little bit of advantage hunting out of a climber with a gun, just propping up wise.
Yep.
And I can I can get super high with my climber. There's pretty much limitless, unless some of these guys have naders and sweaters and everything else that they can get up as high as they want. But I feel like the climber, I can get 30, 40 feet up,
sure,
be able to shoot a long ways with it, as opposed to with the saddle. I've had some issues where I had to maybe try to freehand a deer, and I can't freehand worth a darn. So I'm not a fan long range shooting with a saddle.
No, but I agree.
That's the only reason I use my climber now.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the one major limitation is you're like 100 yards and in with a rifle from the saddle. Mm-hmm. If you can for get sure. a good branch in front of you or something, yeah. you can, you know, get a good prop, but outside of that, it's you're kind of limited. So why don't we do this? Let's be geared geeks for just a second. Go around the table and talk about what your setup is, and let's just see kind of how they're different. Like, let's say 30 to 40 seconds, explain what your rig is. Adam?
What do you want me to say?
You have 30 to 40 seconds.
Okay.
Whatever you want to say. What's your climbing method, your platform, and your saddle setup?
I use Hawk cutdowns.
Okay.
And Amsteel daisy chains on those. My platform is the Solo Scout.
Okay.
I've enjoyed that, actually. It's not for everybody, but I've enjoyed the Solo Scout. And I've got a custom homemade saddle from Mr. Heart of Florida over here.
There you go.
I've been enjoying rocking that last season. Yeah.
Any aiders?
Just on the bottom step. Okay. I use a nylon removable tubular webbing, gotcha. Sewed up, box stitched, all
good
that
deal.
Stuff. Yeah.
You use a climber still, but you're going to make the transition.
Yeah, Summit Vipers, and this year I bought a more of a mobile lock-on setup, so XOP Aerate, I think, and I'm running Hawk stock climbing sticks. That's about to change for sure. Those things suck right out of the box, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So me and Nick are going to drink some beer and modify some sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Hey, that is some redneck engineering.
But now I have a whole tethered setup thanks to you guys, so that's probably going to go to her. I'm going to let her use that.
Oh.
And then I'll
husband
I'll
of the
up,
year
pick up something. I mean, she's the whole reason we're here, so she kind of deserves it. You know what I mean? Yeah, whatever.
Okay, go ahead, Brett.
I'm running a Phantom saddle and four Timber Ninja 20-inch C1 sticks with the built-in aider in them. And I also, from time to time, I use a suader paired with them to get up a little higher when I need to. And I'm also running the Predator XL platform with tether ropes.
There you go. And your pack is what? I saw you had a special pack.
X2 pack.
X2.
What I'm running to haul all my gear in and also to pack out deer as well.
I got you. Yeah, because I'm going to touch on your style of hunting here in a little bit, because I think you warrant a pack out, like a frame pack for what you
do. Or a saddle hunter. All this is new from started last year after coming up here to the tethered event last year in Tallahassee, and I was sold on it and went in, and it definitely changed everything for me last year.
Right on.
Killed
man.
All five deer.
Did you hear that? You hear the influence
saddle?
We does that make us influencers?
I mean, I'm the one that showed him how to use the saddle and everything. So
he says there's no we here, Walter.
He gave me all his luck.
Yeah.
Gave me a pat on the back.
He grazed against me one time.
Yeah.
gave him some luck.
Are you selling any of that luck? Or?
Yeah. It's good for one season. I mean, you won the saddle, dude.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we'll bottle it up. We're going to start selling little one-ounce beard oils that Chase hovers his hands over. And there you go. All right, Nick, what you got?
Some sweat.
Some sweat, yeah.
No, I use a DIY saddle and also a heavily modified pair of or set of Hawk sticks, a tethered Predator platform, and a what is the name of that pack? I put it all in the
Badlands. You got a Badlands, don't you?
Badlands, yeah. But I'm trying to remember the model.
I think it's the Pursuit.
No, it's the Super Day.
Super Day. There you go.
Yeah, that's basically my setup.
Right on, Chase.
I would tell you guys my setup, but it's probably going to change this year. Well, I'm going to use – I've got the Phantom saddle.
Yep.
I've been using the Hawk Heliums with an Aider, Amstel Aider, that you made for me.
Right.
It was 18-inch Aiders, but I'm probably either going to go with the tethered one sticks, or I like the Timber Ninjas are great too. I mean, those two sticks are just right there together.
They are so close.
I mean, they're so close. So yep. One or the other there. I got the same pack as Brett, the Everly stock. I like it because it's for taking the camera and all that jazz that I started doing this past year. And definitely makes it a little bit easier. Everything's more organized.
Yeah.
I use the Predator. the small one, but after seeing the XL, I never mess with the XL. I might switch over to the XL this year.
I can see that. I'm running the Phantom. I'm running a backpack that's going to change. So, I mean, I'm not even going to say what I'm running there because I hate the one that I used last year. Probably going to run the Mystery Ranch pop-up, something in the pop-up series. Original Predator, I don't much care for the XL. It just seems too big. I got tiny little hobbit feet, so I don't need any help there. And then I'm going to alternate between the Timber Ninjas and the Tethered ones. I think for anybody who's listening to this right now and they've considered those two options, both of them, I think everybody at this table would agree, both of them are phenomenal options, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're for both.
Sure. I don't think you can go wrong.
Super light.
Price is almost the same. There are some minute differences. I draw the line on them, and I tell people, if you want a mobile aider, use the Tethered ones. If you like the idea of a built-in aider, use the Timber Ninjas. Mm-hmm. It's really, to me, the only like good, clear delineation between the two systems. They just do different things.
Mm-hmm. Chase, I got a question for you. What is your attachment method on your Hawks? Did you rope mod them, or are you still running the buckle straps?
I use those daisy chains, Amstel daisy chains that come from Tethered.
And you're still using their button, their Versa button or whatever, or did you change that?
For the Hawk?
Yeah.
Yeah, it fit.
Yeah, okay.
It fit around them. Yeah, they were just fine. Like those?
Did yours have the button?
Yeah, mine's got the button. They're right out of the box. I haven't done anything to them. But I bought Lone Wolf Versa buttons and some 8mm rope to change that up because that was frustrating.
Yeah.
That was frustrating.
Yeah.
I did not like their straps at all. Not talking crap. I just, they weren't for me. Mm-hmm. They were not.
I don't think they're for anybody.
Yeah. No.
No.
No, those buckle straps.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Tag out.
One beat they had a tennis player. Here.
He's tagged out.
I
did play tennis.
I think the helium straps actually weigh just as much as the Tethered one and Timber Ninjas combined.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. About that.
I couldn't believe how light those sticks were when that guy. Did anybody catch that guy's name? Anybody know? The gentleman that brought the Tethered ones.
Oh, crap. It's on the
sheet. Sweet beard, by the way.
He
first
did
off.
Have a sweet beard.
He might have surpassed yours a little bit.
Absolutely.
Might have.
Yeah, for sure.
I could not believe how lightweight they were.
It's unreal.
It is. It really is.
And the difference between them is, again, you can't really compare the two. One's a 17-inch stick. Yours is a 20-inch stick with a built-in aider.
Sure.
And the difference between the two is a half pound. I mean, right. But then you're going to have to factor it. I mean, it's... I love them both. I could see myself using both and being happy with each.
Yeah.
Well, with the Timber Ninjas, the one good – if you don't like modifying anything, you don't have to modify anything on that
stick.
Add
the box
with,
ready to hunt.
With the Tethered ones, you're gonna put some of the cell stripping and stuff on there. You're going to have to get whatever aider you want to use with them as well. So they're
I think
– toss a coin.
The stealth stripping component to it is kind of a – almost like we shouldn't even include it in the dialogue, largely because we know everybody in the summer when they don't want to be outside but wish they were is getting on there and buying stealth stripping and putting it on their stuff. Are you going to stealth strippers? Are you going to leave them like they are?
No. I'll leave mine like that.
Really?
They sound like rattling.
They're super quiet.
I played with them. Yeah.
And you can hit them on each other and they don't.
They sound like, I heard somebody tell me this the other day, you know those plastic antlers you get at the store and you can rattle
like
them?
Sound like a little rattle.
Like that.
If you take the cleats on and hit them together, that's kind of what they sound like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe you're right. I would think most people would, you know, because Nick's not going to leave his sticks alone. You saw his Hawk Heliums.
Yeah, but you know,
he took a bandsaw to it and put his name in it.
They got rubber coating. So.
Yeah.
Put the rhino liner on.
That's what's on them.
So I think, Britt, you're the only person that hunts on the podcast right now that hunts a state outside of Florida primarily. Being Alabama, you kill real deer, so you get to hunt real deer. My question for you is, you come from Dothan, because this is now your second time listening to Florida hunters gripe, second time driving through Florida country. How does this area differ from where you normally hunt in Dothan?
I would say a lot of everything out here looks the same. There's no defined, like, big transition lines. The understory is super thick, just everywhere. It all looks thick and a lot, pretty much the same, besides just little oak hammocks here and there. Where in Alabama, there's defined transitions and defined, like, creeks and hardwoods versus pines versus cutovers and fields. Kind of got a variety of stuff.
Do you feel like your talents would... Because you're a very talented hunter. I'm not going to deny that in the slightest. I made jokes about it. You're a resident killer. Chase obviously is as well. But Do you think you could take your skill set from Alabama, apply it here, and it would be relatively seamless, or do you think it'd be different?
I think it'd be different. It would probably take, I'd say, 3 or 4 years to start getting used to how to deer act here in Florida versus gotcha. There.
I think that's a very honest answer.
Yeah, that's
answer.
What I tell everybody yeah. who's starting hunting for the first time, especially in Florida. I'm like, you're going to at least got to give it 3 years before yeah. you're going to start getting stuff figured out. Because mm-hmm. if not, then you're going to go home. You're going to be disappointed, and you're going to give up after your first year. You got to give it at least 3 years. Start figuring things, a little mm-hmm. bit of stuff out. You may get lucky and shoot a deer on your first, because sometimes it's just luck. I mean, you yeah. just go set up in an area
sure, right.
and you're like, why is there a deer here? Mm-hmm. You shoot one. But I think you got to give it at least that 3 years, 3 to 4 years of constantly being out in the woods, constantly scouting
yeah.
and trying to figure out, okay, and you got to kind of pattern the deer, because it seems like they kind of shift some. They kind of got what bigger ranges for mm-hmm. Florida that you kind of got to figure out and yep. stuff, and just figuring out, okay, I know in October they're probably going to be over here. November they may transition over mm-hmm. here some, and you got to constantly be on the deer, as opposed to like where Brett's talking about, like you can kind of set up in them hard transitions and deer they're funneling through
yeah.
there most of the time.
Well, and I think you do also find some of those pockets of deer that are there every year too.
Yeah,
Nick was on the podcast and he was talking about how there's this swamp in Ocala National Forest. I'm just kidding. There was this
swamp. Send everybody there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we normally try to do.
But you talked about that swamp, and every year you can count on there being a certain yeah. degree of deer activity.
Yep.
Does it ever really ebb and flow, or is it pretty consistent?
Pretty consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, you can count every year. There's a certain scrape in a certain spot every
right.
single year.
Right.
In multiple areas, but. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you do have those pockets that move, but there are some that every year, same thing.
And I think what's unique about those areas, when we take the whole dialogue into effect, what Brett's talking about over there, about defined areas, the area you're talking about mm-hmm. is very defined. It's
right.
it abruptly changes, and that funnels movement. And I think your observation is accurate. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just one big monoculture of mm-hmm. never-changing habitat that doesn't – I think it would be different if it was all like this and then there was good food, because then yeah. you'd have good browse, you'd have more deer. Mm-hmm. And so those dense pockets start to swell a little bit and those ranges start to overlap a little more and you run into deer. I think one of the biggest things I see in the difference between here and 30 miles north in Georgia, almost identical habitat around, you know, in those counties. It's sandy soil. It's not very great for agriculture. Maybe a touch better, admittedly. But the deer population – because that slight different nutrient load is through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And so everywhere you go, there's deer sign everywhere, you know, and I think that's kind of something I don't know that Florida can even really truly address. I don't know how you address that. Maybe more burning, better timber management. I don't know, but we'll see. So, Brett, how did your deer season go this year, man? We haven't had you on the podcast before, so I'm going to kind of try and keep you, give the floor. And then, Taylor, you had a very eventful deer season. We're going to transition over to you, sir.
Really?
My 2020-2021 deer season was phenomenal. It was the best one I've ever had. If I ever have another season like that, I'd be very fortunate.
Starting your own podcast. The Mashburn way.
You'll have another season like that.
Yeah.
Just because you think that it was your best ever doesn't mean it was your best ever. That's
yeah.
why you keep going hunting.
You hunt hard and you scout hard. That was not luck. I mean, you're part of our Patreon group, and it seems like every day, it's like just as you clock in the morning, Brett's out there like, hey, I found 13 sheds today, and check this one out. It's 60
yeah.
inches on one side.
Same
way,
you
know? but seriously, how your season started really getting hot in Missouri, right?
Yes. I visited Missouri in 2019, 2020. Had some good encounters. Actually shot a deer and lost up there and changed my setup some, a little heavier arrow. And this year I went up there and got in the same tree I set in last year on the exact same date. And the first morning, first hour of daylight, ended up shooting a 140-inch deer near about the same spot. Mm. I was able to recover this one. He only went about 100 yards.
Was that the one you sent me on Facebook? The big, big wide one?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
It was in a bean
field.
Field,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a big deer. It was grown.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I was going to say something that Brett has kind of talked back and forth with me about is the area he's hunting. He's been hunting it for about 13 years, but
right.
he said the last 3 years he's like solely focused on that area alone. and really? Just put in yeah. most of his time in that area. That's and I think that's probably yeah. been a big part of it is the that particular management area he's just went all in on.
Really?
That area and really dove in and broke it down, and he's starting to get stuff figured out, which I think is helping him with the success he had this past year.
You sold out on one WMA.
One WMA. I was trying to hunt two, and I listened to somebody on podcast talking about pick out like a square mile and learn that square mile, make it yours, figure out the deer, and then start expanding from there. And just so me going all in one particular place on this WMA, just I'm not sure exactly how many acres or if it's a square mile, but I've just went all in for 3 years now. And the stuff I know about it now, I know when certain doe groups are coming into heat. I know what time of the year the bucks are going to be in certain areas because of the does. I've seen when the fawns are born, so I'm able to put that with what I've seen during season and plus other pictures, and can confirm when they go into rut in certain places, and just really diving in deep, and I kind of know what areas to hit at certain times of the year. Mm. And I know where the transitions are between doe bedding areas where the bucks are going to be more likely traveling to check them out. And
you're almost treating your WMA like a lease.
Yeah.
Like truly. Like I think a lot of people who have leases, they don't go scouting other spots. Every weekend they go up there, they check their food plots, they go, they do their scouting. I don't know of too many people I've ever heard of, except for some of the locals who hunt some of these WMAs around here that are quota, selling out like that. And that's interesting because I think maybe I even accidentally stumbled on that last year when I went up to Georgia. I hunted that one parcel every weekend, and I scouted it throughout the summer. I identified it as good, and then I kept pouring myself. And one of the things I was talking about doing this year was putting more cameras in that area. How long do you think it took you to – because you said last year, I know, but how long before you really felt like you were starting to connect the dots is over to simplification, but started to really feel like it was paying dividends?
I believe the second year. The encounters I had on bucks in the second year, I've come that close to having the same season I did this year last year.
Okay.
If I could have maybe got a shot on one or two of the really nice bucks I seen, they just got me by a little bit.
Right.
And it was really at that point that I realized that I was on to something. I didn't focus a little more into it and stayed out of the area till the time was right this year. It's like my third time being in there when I killed that buck this year. In one particular area.
So you're
and
so,
I had a shooter buck the first day I went in there.
Gotcha.
Couldn't get a shot on second. Didn't see nothing. Then the third time was the charm.
These areas that you were staying out of, did you know if other people were already in there?
I have a suspicion that people pass through there. I don't necessarily think they hunt it.
Gotcha.
But I do think they pass through there.
Because the idea of like leaving an area alone gives me anxiety on public land. Like if I know,
same.
You know, I mean, just because, you know, you come stumble along and hunt it and I've left it alone all season. And if I don't know that, that buck may not be there. But right. I mean, it sounds like it's.
Well, there's some other factors that go into me knowing that as well. Being that the places that I hunt, now that I went to a saddle, I hunt places that I couldn't hunt before.
Gotcha.
There are places that you can't get a climber or. Mainly climbing stands. You can't get in there.
Okay, I got you. So you're, the saddle opened up.
It opened up places to hunt. Now I can pick the tree I want to hunt.
Gotcha.
What I could.
So inherently, you knew there are other people probably not hunting those areas because the areas were so difficult to hunt.
That's right.
I got you. Do you think you're? I guess I won't say your hunting style. Well, no, it is your style. Has your approach to where you want to hunt also shifted in that timeline as well? Like, you know, you did your on-the-ground scouting, you sold out to the area. Did that tell you you needed to hunt that area, or did you get into saddle hunting and say, ooh, now I can? Does that make sense?
That's exactly right. I got into saddle hunting by now. I had a place where I killed my first buck in Alabama from being back in Missouri. Mm-hmm. There was a place I've looked at for years. I'm like, I wish I could hunt back here, but there's nowhere to get in and hunt. And now that I have a saddle, I found a tree that is extreme lean, and there's no way you can get in it with a lock on or anything else. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting in this tree and sold out to all day sit there and end up shooting a buck at like 4:30 in the afternoon, coming through looking for does.
That's pretty sweet, man.
And it's a place I've always wanted to hunt. I just previously couldn't hunt it. And you can't necessarily set on the ground because it's so thick.
right
on the ground. You have to be elevated.
Yeah, there's a lot of spots like that. Chase, you and I talked about that in Georgia last year, as I found there's a lot of spots that ground hunting would be ideal if they were to roll a burn through there, but they haven't. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of have to be up, but you don't necessarily really want to be.
Right.
So when you sold out, you've been hunting this area for years. When you sold out to that area, you already had all this knowledge. Did you go in and reaffirm what you already know? How did your scouting change?
Well, I think at the same time of that, I was becoming a better hunter, started listening to podcasts, and my thought process on deer had changed a lot in the past 3 years versus hunting the pretty woods and open woods and now trying to get into thicker stuff and get in where the deer are instead of sitting in the prettier, more open places and easy places to get to. So at the same time, my style of hunting changed in the way I scouted and all of it, and it just all come together basically at the same time.
Right. You said you were listening to Chasing Tails Outdoors and Hunt Fish Florida for that information, right?
Maybe not so much the second one.
I need to dub in some like real awkward voice. He said, I started listening to podcast Chasing Tails Outdoors. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if, because Dan Infault touches on some of that stuff. He says that he'll so thoroughly scout an area that he'll write the whole thing off, right? Is that where?
There's something I use from listening to Dan, too, was how he goes in and he hits different spots of the bedding area. And go to one spot of the bedding area, if you don't have luck, move. So I was hitting, like, just say 150 yards. I'd set up by a bedding area, and I'd go 150 yards down. When I started popping around doing that last year, with this, the 19 and 2020 season with a mobile lock-ons when I started going mobile, that's also my ratio of seeing bucks just went way up. It started using thermals and wind and start moving all around the bedding areas, hitting spots that I've not hunted before.
Gotcha. So you're hunting bedding areas?
Well, I hunt in transition lines of what I believe is bedding areas.
I gotcha.
All right. The deer kind of can bed wherever they want to.
Yeah.
Back home. And I believe in certain situations, they're bedding in this particular places on rainy days and stuff.
What are you going to say?
Yeah, he's not hunting buck beds. He's hunting bedding areas, kind of would hunt here. Because beds could be any deer, because deer's move 300 yards that way, 400 yards that way. It still looks all the same, like we mentioned. So it's not really any identifiable, just okay, that's that 160 inches bed. He beds here on a northeast wind every time, type deal.
Yeah, and we noticed some of that when we went to North Georgia this past weekend, and I went to North Georgia and hunted, and we're coming down this fingertip ridge, and I found rub, and there's a trail going down, and I looked at my little brother, and I was like, there's a bedding area near, and then I looked to my right, and there's a depression. And I'm talking like the mountain does this, and there's like an 8-inch depression where that deer is sleeping in that same spot day after day after day, and there's hair all through that bed. And it dawned, I was like, oh, man, this is what, like, Dan Infall's hunting, you know? He's like Jake Bush, who we've had on the podcast before.
Yeah.
This is what he's hunting when it gets to that. And I think for Southern listeners, a bedding area could be 100 square
yards. It could be 5-6 acres.
It could be 5-6 acres,
it could be
right.
50 acres.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
just bouncing around the outskirts of it on the transition line. It just bounces around using the wind somewhat to your advantage, and just bouncing around and figuring out what part they're walking in and out and using the most.
Have you found, because I feel like I'm on the cusp of something myself, have you found a certain type of vegetation they really prefer to bed in?
I would say no, but there's two different types I find that the deer seem to gravitate to, as in like a cutover and maybe some thick planted pines.
I got you. I'm trying to identify it in the Seek app on my phone. The plant identification won't tell me what it is. It's some kind of privet-looking thing. It's not privet, but there's some kind of privet-looking bush that's around here. And whenever there's like a 30-yard circle or patch of this or bigger, I bust deer out of it all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's interesting. And I noticed it the other day. And when you get in there and you get down to where a deer is, there's like this much room of their eyesight, they can see, and they can see underneath all of that. But they can also, because it's like it's got a lot of like really small little like privet looking like leaves, they can slip out of there without making any noise too. So it's not like they're making a whole bunch of ruckus when they leave. There's a bunch of that by my father-in-law's house, and every time we pass by, I see deer in there. I see beds in there. I see stuff like that. And I'm trying to like find more of that around here because it feels like maybe that might be a pattern. But I found it on this WMA. I found it in places. And now I found it on my father-in-law's place, which is on the south side of the lake. And maybe it's lake specific.
Sure.
But if it's not, I'm going to sell a book. it's going to be one line, one page. It's going to be 300 pages, but it's going to say the same thing over and over. Hunt this bush. But it's some people swear they're like North Alabama, find privet. You find a bunch of privet in an area, they'll bed up around it because they can eat. They don't have to move. They've got security cover.
Makes a transition line also.
It makes a good transition line. Not edible, but in North Georgia, what's that big bush they've got? It's got big leaves, big thick stems. Oh, hellfire. Mountain laurel. Mountain laurel does that all the time, and they'll make a big bedding area. And there's guys who've written articles from back in the 80s, and they will find a worn down path that runs through that bed, that mountain laurel, and they basically will have one shooting lane, and they will just put their rifle on their stick, and they'll sit there just like that all day long. And sure enough, when that deer walks out, he hammers them. But what else did you learn last year, man? Talk to us about that Alabama season. We talked about Missouri, then you came back home.
He runs a lot of cameras.
You do run a lot of cameras.
How many is a lot?
I would anywhere from probably 6 to 8. It's kind of what I've been running
on one WMA.
Yeah, on one
area.
One
of
area.
Where I was going.
Yeah, yeah. How big of a block do you think you're hunting? 1,000 acres? Hey, your buddy Sagan said no.
It could be bigger than that. I'm not exactly sure. Well, yeah, my core area.
Wait a second. This guy knows where you hunt?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's
had to drag a deer
out.
He's
the only one I trust to go in and help me give him deer.
He was blindfolded. But he twisted his ankle, so he let him.
I made him delete all next before he started walking in there. Yeah.
Damn tick. But, man. I mean, it could be like 500 acres to 1,000.
Okay. Wow, so you're like...
I mean, I scout the whole area. I mean, since seasons went out, I've logged 52 hours already in postseason scouting.
In this one area?
In this one area, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second, though, because you kind of have to... You gotta... Hold on. You hunt a lot.
I hunt pretty much every weekend, and when I'm not on overtime at work, I get to hunt 2 days during the week.
Okay, so a minimum of 2 days worth of full hunting every week.
Yeah.
And you dedicate it all to that one small block of timber.
Mostly. I have one other little spot I go to because I've hunted it a long time ago, and I know that area pretty well, too. Every once in a while, I'll switch it up.
Do you feel like it has negatively impacted? Like, have you seen deer movement decline? Because my first thought is, good Lord, the difference being I couldn't wait that long. But now what you're saying, it's like my immediate thought is stay out of it till it's right, but you put a lot of time into it, so.
No, I mean, I bounce around a lot. Like, I might go to one spot, and I might not even go back there the rest of the year. I have certain places that I do hunt multiple times, but I got clean access.
Gotcha.
Good way to get in and out, and then I have other places that I'm still poking and prodding and trying to figure out more, coming in different areas of the same general place and maybe find something that's even hotter during season. So sometimes I'm going to places, maybe throw one or two sits at it, and I might be moving somewhere else and wait until my other places I know when the time gets right, and then places then I go to them. But in the meantime, I'm bouncing around.
So year three, what's this going to look like for you? Because now, I mean, I feel like you've mastered that area. Year four of selling out?
This past year was year three.
Okay, so this will be year four. So what are you going to do now that you've kind of dominated this area? I know you said you're starting to spread out. Are you going to add, like, do you have plans to add another WMA block to it or just another block of the same WMA?
No, I just plan on expanding my area because I have a few deer that have showed up. And my goal this season is to find their core area. I have a few deer I know, but I have a few deer that are just
hammers.
Just good ones. And
right.
My goal is to go find them before season this year.
I got you.
To expand my area just a little bit.
So it's an all-out sellout on this. You are completely sold out to this spot. That, I mean, it makes sense, man. I can't argue with the results. I'd love to be like, oh, don't do that. But, I mean, killed it. Killed some great deer.
Yeah, it was tough. I didn't want to do it, but I knew in the past when I spent all year hunting, this certain WMA always had a chance at a nice deer. So I said, well, I'm going to try it for the first year. And it was okay. And the second year started really hitting home. And the third year, grand slam.
Mm. Yeah. It's going to be hard to live up to 2020 season, man.
Yes, it is.
That was a banger season for you. Chase, you got any other follow-ups on that tactic?
No, I mean, I like it.
I do too.
I mean, if you find an area that's constantly producing deer, why would you leave it? I mean, it sounds like he's found something that works. Right? I mean,
yeah.
Especially in a – I mean, Alabama is a little bit better than Florida, but it's not
– little?
It's not like Iowa or Missouri or something
tough.
Like that.
You have
I
to
mean,
put in the legwork and the man hours.
Yeah. Yeah, he's putting in the time, and he's not relying on luck.
Yeah, no.
So he I like that.
I think in Florida you'll have to take what he's doing and make the space bigger, just because we all at the table agree that the ranges of Florida whitetail are larger than most other states, just from a nutritional standpoint. Right. So I think that area probably would end up being bigger. But the whole time he's talking, I'm thinking about selling out to those two smaller units that I hunt up in Georgia, and just I've got 26 trail cameras that I've got ready for this year. And I was planning on covering more area, right? I was planning on covering this WMA, some other WMAs around this area, just in case I find get a good buck on camera. But I might just freaking because I've got 100. I don't know. I mean, he was 80 inch plus big 8 point, right? In Georgia, that one I sent you.
Yeah,
he was wide.
Yeah, he was a decent buck.
And I know there's more quality, there's more up there. So why not go ahead and sell out to those areas and maybe pay Brett to come scout him with me. put some gas money in the tank. That seems like a no-brainer.
I love walking in the woods.
Yes, you do, dude. 50-plus hours scouting already. Season just ended like 2 weeks ago, too, because it's Alabama.
It ended in February.
Yeah.
Well, some of that shed hunting, right? Are you counting your shed hunting
that? Well, yeah, I'm scouting.
Right.
But when I'm scouting, I'm finding sheds in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Finding sheds. I mean, Florida's not really a shed hunting state.
My first one this turkey season.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it a big one? Oh, is that the one you posted? Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was respectable.
Deer, but it's nice deer. I definitely shoot the crap out of them.
So. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there was a fella, the last guy to leave. What was his name? I don't remember. But anyways, there was a fella here that was talking earlier, and there's a guy from Michigan. Poor guy got stationed down here. And he's like, so the deer hunting in this area, what's it like? I was like, where are you from? He's in Michigan. I said, okay, well, if you see a legal deer, you probably should shoot it.
Yeah,
he's like,
don't hesitate.
And he just kind of like does like the Stewie Griffin, like, I don't know if I can. And the other guy came up and he's like, yeah, dude, let me show you a really respectable deer. And it's like a basket rack, a little 8 point. And I was like, dude, first and last tag. And he looked at me like this. I'm like, I don't know where you're hunting. There might be better potential. But I can tell you right now, first and last tag, that joker's getting hammered by me. End of story.
And all the other ones in between.
Yeah, and all the ones in between. That's right. That's right. I should have told him to buy some HD glass so he could identify that third point. Well, Taylor, let's talk about your season, dude. You sold out hard to scouting this year. I've never seen a Florida dude publicize his scouting efforts to the degree that you did. You worked really, really hard. You hunted even harder. I think you hunted beyond when I did and most other people, Florida guys. What did you see from those efforts this year?
So I've got a couple of mentors, good buddies of mine. One of them is in our area just known as a stone cold killer, has been hunting. Adam and Nick both know him. He's been hunting public land around us for probably somewhere around 25 years. And he's not that old. I mean, I think he's mid-30s. So, I mean, he started hunting really young. He's taken me under his wing, and he scouts a lot. And, I mean, I trust what he says about deer hunting to the degree that if he told me to climb this tree in a Santa suit and sing a song, that I would do it, you know? So I started just putting in as much time as I could scouting and trying to run more trail cameras. I work a job in which I can pretty much get out every day if I want. I work nights, and a lot of days I will either hit the woods after
work to either check trail cameras or check a new area, or you know, if I can get out and hunt and the conditions are right, I'll do that as well. Just to be totally honest with you, we didn't kill nothing. We didn't kill a single deer, but had multiple opportunities blown by myself. My wife got to see her first deer, made a shot on her first deer. Unfortunately, it was a clean miss, but it happens.
Or fortunately.
Yeah, well, sure, yeah. So, I mean, the opportunities were good. I mean, you know, I did hunt a lot. I don't know exactly how many days I hunted. Probably 40, you know, which is a lot to have no meat in the freezer, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Chase, you said it yourself, you've got to give yourself several years, and I've only been doing the public land solely thing for probably, I'd say, 2.5 seasons, really. So I've got a lot to figure out, and I think, honestly, scouting as much as you can, even more than you hunt in this state, is really the key to success.
Yeah.
There are people, like you said, that can count on luck. I'm not one of those guys. I'm definitely not. for those listening, Walt's pointing at Chase. So I had bow season was tough. I saw one doe opening morning. I had a quota permit. It's kind of a joke that this place is a quota.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a doe. She was about 60 yards. Never saw another deer that hunt. And I didn't see another deer on stand until opening weekend of muzzleloader. I wasn't really super confident in that spot, but I kind of just ran out of time. So I decided to sit there anyways. Nick was hunting nearby. I think his dad was hunting nearby. It's a popular spot. Mm-hmm. My wife was hunting, I don't know, 350 yards from me, I guess. And the first morning was actually incredible. I don't know if I would call it 100% rut activity, but it sure did look like it. I mean, mm-hmm. 4 bucks chasing a doe around.
Wow.
in a wide open area. It was really cool.
Bucks.
Yeah. 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 It was phenomenal, really. So no shots, never had them, you know, we're hunting with a muzzleloader. There's probably a lot of people that would shoot a deer out past 200 with a muzzleloader. I haven't had that much experience with one, so I wasn't that comfortable. The next morning, had a buck come out in front of me in some brush, and I was trying to wait for him to walk out of it, thinking he was walking. Is that perpendicular to me? Going this way? Is that perpendicular?
Yeah, parallel.
Is that whatever?
Whatever.
You know what I mean.
He was walking near you,
but he was actually walking away from me. Yeah. And there's a lot of tall grass, and he walked out of this patch of brush into that tall grass, and all I could see was head and neck. But he was heading towards my wife.
Right.
So I was like, let me just not chance it, and hopefully he'll walk and give her a shot. Literally, as soon as he disappears out of my life, boom, and I'm starting to get stoked. Well, unfortunately, somebody had backdoored us and come in across on the other side of the open area.
Oh, no.
And shot it.
It was Nick.
It wasn't Nick, but Nick knows him.
Who would do that?
So, I mean, I was a little pissed, to be honest with you, not going to lie. But it happens. It's public land, you know.
Yeah.
Ended up riding on their tailgate on the way out, which just made it worse.
Oh, no.
And so... saw some more deer that hunt, and just never could make it happen. I had one more opportunity later in the season on a hunt in which I had an antlerless tag, and I had a spike at 25 yards of my muzzleloader, and just, this sounds dumb, but in this spot, he literally has the chance to get big. Like a buddy of mine the week before killed a 115-inch buck out of the same tree, you know? And I went against everything I believe in letting him walk. I literally went against everything I believe in. No success, but still in my eyes, a very successful season. Learned a lot. Know some changes I'm going to make to gear this year. Obviously, saddle hunting is probably going to be in my arsenal. It has no reason to be now that I've won this prize pack thanks to you guys.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Tethered. Yeah. I'm going to add more trail cameras this year, and I'm probably going to try and scout a lot more. I don't know if that's possible, but I'm going to try.
Well, okay, so from accomplished to aspiring, and I don't mean that in a slightful way, but he's in year two. What in year three do you think? What you kind of know about the type of – he's hunting areas that look very similar to this, just flatter and maybe it's not much different, right?
Where we hunt, there's not as much planted pines. There's actually a lot of oaks where we hunt, a lot of swamps.
Okay.
So it is – I would say it is kind of a bit different.
Yeah, okay.
But it is
right.
Still Florida. Like you said, right. It's flat terrain. And stuff like that.
What would you? He comes to you and says, "Oh, wise one, year three. What should I be looking to?"
I think early on for me, what made a big difference was actually finding deer scat and hunting them places and putting cameras in those places, and found I was getting on a lot more deer by going off of that versus trails or signs, especially.
Oh, interesting.
Especially early season or bow season.
That is definitely something that I've thought of and planning on implementing. I'll say another thing that I'm going to be doing is whatever app you guys use. I mean, some people use HuntStand. I use mm-hmm. Onyx. I think you guys do as well. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys that have taken me under their wing, they will not walk past any deer sign and not mark it on their Onyx. I usually wait till I find large quantities of deer sign in an area to start marking it. Whereas this year, if I walk down a road, just like this one here, and I see a deer track, I'm going to mark it. Just because I did a podcast with a guy, his name's Caleb Hood, he comes from our area, and another just public land killer, and we had a late season hunt that, unless you're going to save up years and years of points, you're probably never going to draw this place. So had the opportunity to hunt it. Yes, exactly. And he sent me a screenshot of his Onyx map, and you can just, I mean, it's just littered with pins.
Right.
So that's definitely something I'm going to be doing this year for sure.
Well, there's a little bit of difference in their hunting. Brett is hunting an area where he can hunt the whole season.
Yes.
When you're on quota hunts, you get 3 5-day hunts. Yep. So there's quite a bit different that kind of goes into that.
Yes.
Yeah, when I meant different, I was talking like terrain-wise. Like what he sees here isn't very much different. But you're totally right. Yeah, he can sell out to a unit because he has the luxury of hunting it whenever he wants to, which is an inherent challenge that we face in Florida.
Yeah, there's a lot of places that are quota-only here. Yeah. Yeah. For good and bad reasons, I think.
Done poorly and well, both at the same time, right? Yeah. Like the one place we're talking about, the pipeline unit, it definitely is managed the right way, so it's worth that time. Other places don't, and you see a stagnant or decline of wildlife. It's not treated like it's a quality unit. It's not true. They don't uphold their own standards with what they allow to be shot, mm-hmm. and as a result, it's not worth it being what it's labeled as.
Right.
Which is frustrating. It's a very frustrating thing to be a sportsman and have some of these units be so selective, and yet you get so little time to really. How do you sell out on something that you're going to hunt for 4 days?
Well, and that's the problem is a lot of time. I mean, you can put as much scouting in as you want, but sometimes there is a little bit of situational luck involved because you only have 3, 4, 5 days to get it done. You know,
right?
Yep.
Well, but Brett,
getting attacked.
Yeah, we're getting attacked. He just got hit
by a stingerless bee. What year did you see the most growth? That's my last question for you. Like, what year did you really be like, oh, I'm doing something right?
Probably about 4 years after hunting public land.
Gotcha.
Which I started out hunting on leases.
Same.
And
I think most people did.
Kind of lost all leases and mm-hmm. stuff like that and started hunting public land, and it took a little while.
Yeah, leases got expensive too. They were cheap when I was growing up.
Yes.
Well, and it's like when you spend $1,800 or $2,000 or whatever. I mean, there's leases down by us that go for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year.
Yeah,
you know, that's not in my pocketbook. I know it might be in yours, Walt, but it's definitely not in mine. So if you pay $1,800, $2,000, and you don't see no deer, it's like, you know, it makes it hard to keep shelling that money out.
Yeah.
Which was for me, you know, 2 years ago we got on a lease up in North Florida, and it just wasn't what it.
Could have been.
Could have been, in my opinion. Yeah. And didn't really like the leaseholder, and mm-hmm. just said, you know what, we're just gonna hunt public.
you know, the worst thing about those expensive leases is a lot of times it's already mismanaged property because there's just timber. That's all they care about. You can't roll any controlled burns through there.
Right.
The only food plots you can put in are in between rows or an old cutover, and God forbid you put in the food plot and then they decide to do some kind of timber work and tear it all
after
up.
You spend
several
hundred dollars and hours of time putting it in.
And so, like, for me, like, if I found the right, like, small parcel of property, I might slip somebody a couple $100 to hunt it.
Right.
But by and large, man, I'd rather spend $300 and go hunt with Brett or $400 and go hunt Georgia.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
it's like, I. It already feeds a part of me anyways, that sense of adventure, striking off to a new area, seeing what I can find, doing it on my own accord, you know. I mean, also, I think I really hate having to share it with people because it's like, I want to go over there, but I don't want to upset my buddy. My buddy might call me, you know, a thief for going over there and shooting the deer. And so then it's like, you know, all these damn politics, you know, with public land, more or less, get there first and it's yours. You know, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, get there first, and you've got that spot to yourself, unless Nick backdoors you, and then, you know, it is what it is. But, well, okay, you two have been awful quiet. Let's talk. I mean, you kind of talked about your deer season already on the podcast. Mm-hmm. What about you, sir?
It was a little slow. I was really busy this deer season. I didn't get to hunt probably half as much as I have in years past. But I started off, I had a pretty good quota hunt. Actually, my favorite hunt to draw. It's close to my house there, and I've scouted it a lot, hunted it for several years, and kind of feel like I finally figured it out. And this year, the sign was down, and you know, I ran some cameras in there, didn't get the pictures that I normally got either. I let does walk just about every day, just about every set, actually. And finally, the
big
last
mistake.
Day, I shot a doe on the last day. Just to put a little bit of meat in the freezer, and then I kind of swapped over to trying to put my little cousin on a deer, and so that, probably the coolest thing I got to do all year was self film, but I filmed my little cousin getting to shoot his first deer with a bow, and it was just coolest thing. I was in a saddle, he was in a lock on, and he's had several close calls, and he's hunting with me for 2 years now, so for him to finally get that opportunity, made a great shot, really was an awesome hunt, really cool story. Made a good video, so I mean that made my season just that. So,
but give them another shameless plug as to where they can go find that.
Yeah,
video.
If you guys want to see it, you can go see it at Central FL Outdoors on YouTube. That's my channel.
Make sure to subscribe.
Yeah. Like, subscribe.
Hit that little bell notification so you get notifications every time we drop a video.
Like, comment,
share with your friends. No, it is a good video. That's why I got excited when you brought that up, because I'd completely forgotten that until just now. That was a great video, man. That was fun.
It was a fun hunt, man.
He put a dope shot on that deer, if
I
recall.
Man. I mean, he's shooting like 35 pounds and complete pass through, sticking in the dirt 6 inches on the other side. It was incredible.
Yeah,
made a great
shot.
Nice
out of a 35-pound bow, for real.
Mm-hmm. Boys like pulling back those little like Dollar General like string bows with the suction cup. I pulled back one the other day and I about dang near ripped the daggum cams off of it. I just like snatched it back. I was like, oh man, I about busted his bow. But
well, when he shot it too, I mean, obviously I knew he hit it because I heard it, but I said, man, I have no idea where he hit it. I was like, man, we're gonna just give it some time and wait. I went back and watched the video. And I said, dude, you smoked him. Like, you 10-ringed him. He's down. Let's go get him. Right. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. I'm getting to where I really enjoy these little, like, spring roundtable discussions that we're doing now. Because last year we did it at the saddle event. This year we did it. First off, I like doing these in person. We need to start traveling around to meet people and do these in person. But
yeah, they're fun.
They are. But I really enjoy. Because, like, last year I did a lot of whining on the podcast, the saddle, because I was so frustrated with Florida trying to get on deer and whatnot. And it feels like,
we're here for you, brother. Don't worry.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. We need a Florida Deer Hunters Anonymous or something, you know, where we can all get together and complain.
Needs to be sponsored by a beer company.
Yeah.
Drink a lot of it.
Wine light. I think this is fun. I really enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it. This fall is going to be trying for me, because I'll have my first child, my first son, on the way. I've been told that I'll still get out to hunt plenty.
You need to hold her to that now.
I'm putting it into audio form on purpose.
Of plenty.
I need to get written permission, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like FWC wants you to have. But on that docket of things that are coming down the pipe, I think we're going to try to put together some kind of group hunt for Patreon. We'll see if that comes to fruition this fall or in the spring.
Yeah.
Logistically, that's kind of a nightmare for our group. People are scattered everywhere, but North Georgia bear hunt, and then I'm probably going to be selling out on Southwest Georgia again and putting some time into that. And you know,
North Georgia bear hunt. It's pretty cool.
Huh?
I've done that North Georgia bear
hunt.
It's pretty cool.
We found some really hot bear sign, hot and old bear
sign.
We'll
talk about when we press the record button again about where.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, I want, it's going to be a muzzleloader hunt. And
so you're going for the earlier one then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we found a grove of white oaks that was just dropping like mad.
Nice.
Big spring, like this real dense area that's covered, that's got a spring in there, and there was bear sign all around where he was taking dead trees and ripping them down and then pulling all the grubs out of them. So he's there, I think, more or less year-round. You can see all kinds of historical sign there. So he or she, big or small, I don't know what's legal in Georgia. You know?
It's just as long as she's it's been 9 years or so since I've done it, but I think it was like, I don't know how you're supposed to tell this, but I think something to do with like milk or cubs,
gotcha.
Something like that. So
gotcha.
I mean, pretty much everyone that was there was telling us as long as she don't have cubs, she's legal.
Yeah.
So
well, I think based on the size of the track, it's probably a boar. It's a pretty good size. I mean, I haven't shot enough bear to know big from small, but it seemed like a big old print. I think you're right. I think in Georgia, it's just no cubs, and you can hammer down, and it's gonna be smokeless. So black powder. So if I can get within black powder range with iron sights, then you know.
Are you gonna switch to Blackhorn 209 this year? Boy, I just called you out, didn't I?
I don't know that I want to do any switching with firearms because all of y'all spending so much daggone money buying up stuff left and right, it is making it ridiculous. Chase brought me $90 worth of 7mm ammo and it's 3 bullets. So I mean, I'm just saying, probably I will.
It's worth it. I'll be honest with you, it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. You and everybody else, it's me. Yeah. It's the me's out there.
Like,
oh, okay, I got you. Well,
I got a yard sale.
But. Yeah, no, I think I will make the switch.
It's so much worth it.
I just bought a whole thing of 777, so I'm like, maybe I'm just going to go ahead and burn through what I just spent $35 on, but at the same time.
I don't know, man.
I know.
I don't know. I made the switch last season, and it was, yeah.
You did
better
too,
performance.
Right?
I did.
Your gun's
gun
so much cleaner. So much cleaner.
Stick to it.
Yeah,
no,
did you hear this story?
I'll swap with Walt. Uh-huh. I'll take the Blackhorn. I'll take the
pellets.
Would you want
to make a swap?
You can have the Blackhorn.
You didn't like it?
A gun didn't go off.
I
shot in a buck this
that.
Year. Pap! The primer went off. The powder, I don't know if there was static electricity in there or not.
Did you change your primer, the breech plug? You changed the breech plug?
Yeah, I'm using the Blackhorn breech plug
Were
and everything.
Were you using 209 Magnum primers?
No, because I was using the recommended primers or whatever they told me to use. And I had zero problem sighting it in. I mean, every shot, pow, and then
I had something similar happen, but it was I sat through a rain,
right?
And I don't have one of those little barrel condom things. I just kind of tie my face mask to it and point it downwards. You know, redneck engineering. Water goes downhills.
Yep.
Can't go in the hole if the hole's painted down. And shot my gun to unload it, and it was like
Sludge.
The bullet rolled out of the end. I was like, man, I'm really glad I did not shoot a deer with that.
Yeah, well, you're really lucky. It didn't
I
stop
just reload
halfway.
Mine after it rains.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably
a
good idea.
Just take everything out and start over.
I probably
clean
it
out.
That,
don't even play, because buddy, same thing. He shot. He had one big buck came out, shot, and then it was just he had sludge in his gun.
That's crazy.
From a rain, and he left his charge in there for like a week or something. It was just all sludge in there. But
I think the biggest reason why I want to go to 209 is so that I was about to say it's cleaner and it doesn't rust the gun
so
much, dude.
Cleaner.
It's unreal.
My guns are still loaded right now.
Yeah,
my guns are still loaded right now.
Yeah,
I ain't worried about it.
10, 15 shots. You don't have to run anything. I mean, just if you want to just take a bunch of shots. But,
Because with that 777, you got to
after about two shots, you got to clean it real good.
Pro tip: if you want to, you can't leave it like this. But if you want to quick clean patch through without having to use the expensive stuff, spray Windex on your patch and push it through. It's got ammonia in it, so if you leave it in there, your whole barrel is going to be shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in between shots, as you're doing stuff, if you just want to throw something through it real quick, you can take that breech plug out, put the patch through with Windex. It'll clean it out squeaky clean, but then you got to run some some hoppies or ballast all right. or something through there afterwards to, you know, code it. But
it was y'all's podcast with Tony Smotherman that really yeah. that really pushed me to get do that, because the year before I had just picked up a muzzleloader just for the added opportunity to hunt.
Yeah.
And I was using just some 777 pellets, and I wasn't happy with their performance. And it was just so dirty.
Just so dirty.
It's just the dirtiness.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I will go to it. I don't know.
Well, before we get off the podcast, I think we need predictions from everybody for their 2021-2022 deer season.
Okay. That's probably pretty fair.
Two predictions for the season.
Are we doing bold predictions?
One regular, one bold.
Okay, one regular, one bold. All right. I'll volunteer. My regular prediction is that Chase will once again grow tired of hunting in Florida and long for a Midwestern hunt. My bold prediction is that I will kill 2 racked bucks in Georgia this year that are 8 points or bigger.
Okay.
That's factoring in knowing that I've got a kid.
That's true.
Yep. I think it's pretty bold.
It's bold that you think you're going to get out at all.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, there you go.
You could have said, I'm going to get out more than twice this year.
Yeah.
We'd have been like, yeah, that's super bold.
Well, I was going for my Colin Cowherd, like real inflammatory bold predictions here. Okay.
Man.
Beaches, go ahead.
Two predictions.
One regular, one bold.
I'm starting to come up with one here. I mean, I think that this could be the year, some of the pieces I've put together, that I kill my first registry. So I'm looking for that. I think last time I was sitting at this table, I made a prediction about number of deer, but really this year I'm looking for that one good buck.
Registry in Florida, for anybody who doesn't know, is 100 inches.
Yeah, 100 inches, Boone and Crockett. So that's what I'm looking for. That'd be my bold prediction. I'd say I'm going to kill a buck with my bow in a very particular spot that I know of. Opening weekend is my, I would say, less bold prediction.
Gotcha.
But
all right, Taylor.
I really don't like this. I'm probably gonna say I'll kill my first public land deer this year. I think that's probably my non-bold prediction.
Yep.
Bold prediction is probably I think Mrs. Willis kills just a giant.
I agree, dude.
Honestly.
I think that's actually a pretty regular prediction. I just feel like she's just going to hammer something out of that Phantom. She's just going to
The saddle's going to change it.
Yeah,
probably so.
She's got some of that luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
$550 worth of it. No, that's more than that. Actually, it's probably close to $700.
Yeah. 7 to 8.
Saddle's 250, platform's
180 or 90 or
something. Those Ascender, Ropemans.
$60, right?
Kong duck. It was 70,
Oh, she got the Kong duck.
She got the Kong duck, and then she got
bucks.
The 8mm rope. Yeah.
And then the pack, too, right?
Predator that's, pack.
And she got the Predator pack, yeah. Golly.
And Chase touched it before he handed it to her, so yes. that's extra.
That's
guaranteed registry is what it says on the box.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that pay tip. Never mind. Slow burn.
It took me a minute there.
There it is.
All right, Brett. He was deep in thought over there, so he's got a humdinger coming.
Yep.
My prediction is kill a mature buck this coming season, say 4.5 or older.
Okay.
Then my bold prediction is going to be to tag out in Alabama and kill an out-of-state buck.
So that's 3 bucks.
In Bama.
And a bonus buck.
Out-of-state.
Daggone. Missouri? Is that where you're headed? Oh, boy. That's legit. That's Parker McDonald level stuff.
I wouldn't have missed that one buck this year. I would have tagged out in Alabama and killed that buck in Missouri. So.
And you do all that with your bow, too, don't you?
Yes, I'm bow hunting only strictly.
There you go. That's bold. That's fiery.
I don't have the patience for that.
Buffalo Wild Wing stuff right there. All right, Hoss.
Regular prediction. I'll tag out. I'll tag out before Chase on public land this year. Bold. I'll actually start turkey hunting and outdo Walt.
Hey.
I want to go bold.
There you go.
Quality over quantity.
Quality over quantity, that's right.
My regular prediction is I'm going to get 2 solid hunts on camera.
Oh, wow.
I like how you change that up a little bit.
2 solid hunts on camera. Mm-hmm. for the YouTube channel.
Nice.
Kind of bring some more attention to Florida. We've mentioned earlier there's not a lot of Florida content out there. So I want to get two good hunts on camera.
Good stories.
Will be my regular prediction.
Okay.
It's not even bold prediction. I will kill a deer 140 or better this year. Not necessarily in Florida, but I will kill a deer 140 or better this year.
Hot dog.
I want to break into that 140 range.
I think it's time. It's high time.
If it's Florida, it's Florida. But what's that?
Are you going out of state?
I got plans to go out of state this season.
Uh-oh.
But not necessarily the Midwest, though.
Sure.
It'll be in the South somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somewhere.
Unless somebody invites me to Missouri.
He's silent.
Real silent.
He doesn't have to invite me. Oh, hey. I know what his truck looks like now.
He's like, buddy,
I'm not sharing.
That's great. Oh, man. Well, guys, I appreciate you. First off, driving as far as you did, hanging out with us, swapping saddle stories, taking the time to podcast. I mean, y'all got some – well, you got a long drive home.
Yeah. Two hours.
2 hours. So, guys, we really appreciate you tuning in each and every week to listen to us jab on about different things. I can foresee several different podcasts coming down the pipe just from this one dialogue. I see adventures coming as well. And I have one simple request. No matter what you do this week, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep-sea adventures.
Coming to me.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.